Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Nick Sconce is a fiction writer who, in his Hatchet Women series, explores the dark side of corporations and four women taking down corrupt insurance agencies. Sconce's background is in fraud investigation. He joined Doug Hamilton on Prairie Public's Main Street this week to discuss waste, fraud, and abuse in the health insurance industry, and he suggests some ways to help address the crisis in the cost of health care coverage. Sconce is a pen name, and he begins here by detailing his background.
I work in the financial services industry and have experience both managing a Medicare Advantage sales force or sales organization, as well as working extensively with Medicare supplements, both with my own clients directly, but also with managing other agents as they work with their clients.
Why did you write a thriller about the health insurance industry? And actually, you've written a couple, and they are titled Hatchet Women. Why did you do that?
Well, ultimately, fraud, waste, and abuse, as it's known in the Medicare world, is very rampant. And ultimately, sales agents are taught to identify it, or at least be able to identify it from a consumer standpoint. And over time, I came to realize that by and large, and I would say upwards of 85 to 90% of the fraud, waste, and abuse that hits Medicare in particular is not from a consumer standpoint. It's what I consider to be the supply side of the equation rather than the demand side. So it compelled me to shed some light on that.
Well, that's what we're going to be talking about in detail. Let's, first of all, though, find out about who the Hatchet Women are. What is this story about?
Sure. So the Hatchet Women are a group of four women. The title is somewhat of a play on words because the term hatchet man is a term in the insurance and financial services world for someone who comes into a sales organization and essentially cleans house. They terminate agents and agent contracts for a number of reasons, mainly because of agents behaving badly, but sometimes it can be just for lack of production. But I came to realize that there were not an equal distribution of that role between men and women. And so Hatchet Women are a group of four women who set out in investigating insurance fraud internally with one particular company, and then over time branch out and go independent and become contract workers to help other insurance companies root out internal fraud in their organizations.
Sounds like a little glass ceiling element to the story as well. Is the health insurance industry, as I understand it, focused on amortizing the cost of health care and at the same time limiting it? I mean, there's a bottom line involved here.
Yeah, there is. Ultimately, there are, health insurance companies are under constant pressure from a cost standpoint. Consumers are obviously driving a higher demand for quality care. At the same time, hospital conglomerates are setting prices based on their own administrative models, and those are trying to predict what consumers will actually pay for a healthcare service rather than being levelized or standardized across the board just in terms of the actual cost of the service. So there are a lot of pressures put onto health insurance companies while they're still trying to maintain their operational costs and their profit margins.
Well, we've recently had another experience with the Affordable Care Act. That's been a political football with lots of energy for a long time now. What could be done to make the Affordable Care Act work better?
There are a number of issues, and I appreciate the question, Doug. There are a number of ways that Obamacare could be fixed. One in particular that's glaring to me is eliminating these boundary lines that health insurance companies create around marketplaces. That started when our system was more based on a community and or a county-wide hospital system. Mm-hmm. And so those original boundary lines were either around counties or around major metropolitan areas or sometimes dividing major metropolitan areas. Under Obamacare, they've drawn those boundary lines in order to dominate a market by coming in and undercutting their premiums temporarily, so that drives out the competition And then, within subsequent years, you see these really aggressive rate increases and hikes, mm-hmm. Like in Oklahoma and Arizona, where you see 37%, 42% year-over-year of these rate hikes. Obamacare did nothing to prevent that type of marketplace domination. And when you see that, depending on the population you're looking at, 50 to 75% of the population qualifies for Obamacare subsidy, and there's no preventative measure in place for an insurance company to take that rate hike because they know that 50 to 75% of that is going to be subsidized and paid by the federal government and thereby through the taxpayer. So those two elements in general need to be fixed immediately if we're going to continue with Obamacare.
Well, from the perspective of a person who pays for health insurance, our hospital networks and the insurance companies in a relationship that encourages price competition, or are they in a relationship that ensures price escalation?
They do from a standpoint of, like I mentioned earlier, this hospital conglomeration. Early on, when hospitals started buying general practices, and this has happened over, there's an ebb and flow to it, but over the last 10 years or so, hospitals have been buying general practitioners and making them internists or hospitalists. The original intent was to contain cost and to also provide better accessibility to rural areas because it's all in one system. But again, once we started looking at price master administrative agreements, that's where prices really started to skyrocket. So you have, in a very localized setting, monopolies from a hospital perspective. Where the networks come into play is if it's a closed network, that also helps those prices skyrocket because in a closed network environment, if you get a referral from your general practitioner at hospital system A, you can't go to hospital system B. You can't carry that referral with you. You have no control over it. You have to go through your entire care system through that same hospital. And so that obviously drives up price because there's no competition once you've come into the front door with the general practitioner.
If you were asked for advice about medical insurance coverage for a young middle-class family of four, what would you recommend?
I would currently, with the options that are available now, let's assume that they don't have coverage through their employer. My initial recommendation would be to maximize the accessibility of employer-sponsored health insurance. If that's not available, what I would recommend is getting a major medical policy, or some people call that a catastrophic coverage type policy, and then taking the savings that you wouldn't be paying in premium for a full coverage type policy and putting that money into a medical savings account so that you can have that for deductible and copay purposes.
So it requires a fair amount of financial self-discipline.
It does. That is one thing that is highly required in that scenario, yes.
The Four Hatchet Women in your book, the most recent one, The Back Bay Slings, they get a new contract to go undercover as Medicare Advantage sales agents. What's the issue there?
Ultimately, in that particular one, that is where I seek to shine light on the fraud, waste, and abuse from the supply side, as I mentioned earlier. Quite a bit of that, in reality, comes from what's known as durable medical equipment suppliers. And in my own experience, I have seen companies like that deliver walkers or scooters without an order to either a retirement community or a nursing home setting, and then turn around and bill Medicare. And then revisiting that again, you see that those scooters have never been used. They've got collected dust on them. The next time you return to that setting 3 months later. There are other forms of fraud, waste, and abuse that I discuss in that. One is that under Medicare Part A, you have your hospital coverage, but you also have hospice care coverage. And those two systems internally do not communicate. So there are some end-of-life centers that will put people on hospice even though they are not terminally ill because it's a way to double bill Medicare. So and you could take a 50-bed facility and turn it into 100 beds on paper simply because you're billing Medicare twice. I know of a very specific example where a lady was on both hospital care and hospice care for over 5 years. And the fraud of that one person alone, she didn't commit it, her directors at that particular facility committed the fraud, but it resulted in over $1.7 million in just one lady's case. So those are the types of things I really felt compelled to shine a light on, and that could very easily be fixed with the right type of internal audit measures in place with Medicare.
Something that is so intimidating about health care insurance, at least from my perspective, is that it can be very complicated in terms of how much is your responsibility, how much is the insurance responsibility, how much is, you know, everybody's. It could be months before you get a final bill. Has health insurance simply become too complex for consumers to navigate without professional help?
Yeah, I believe so. I consider myself to a certain extent an expert in the industry, and I'm very challenged with trying to read through and decipher an explanation of benefits letter, which comes before your final bill. That, to me, still is like reading something in a foreign language, and I know what to look for. With my own clients and with other agents' clients, we've sat down and tried to reconcile that to see where the absolute end result is, and it's very time-consuming, even if you have an agent or another expert walking you through that. It's become very bureaucratic, very complicated. I think it's done on purpose, quite frankly, so that you don't really know when the bill's coming and how much it's going to be or when the bills will stop and not continue to be added on to.
If we had, as has been proposed by some people, Medicare for all or a national health system with health care as a right due all citizens, would innovation and research suffer? That's what you sometimes hear as an argument against it.
I think that innovation and research would suffer. I think that the United States leads the world when it comes to research and development, particularly in the pharmaceutical areas. It irks me to no end when we see these comparisons of what another country pays for the same drug that we pay for, because in a very real way, the United States is subsidizing the research and development for the entire globe. And so just because, Canada or Mexico can get a drug cheaper doesn't necessarily mean that it costs differently. It's that the research and development has been done in the United States. And that could very well diminish rapidly if we were under a system of, single payer or Medicare for all. The other side of Medicare for all is, how do you pay for it? Bernie Sanders' plan increases employer and employee taxes to a point where I think it would disincentivize employers from offering any type of employer-sponsored plan and essentially move those dollars over to the tax side of things rather than the benefit side. And I think that will also ultimately hurt innovation and research and development as well.
Well, as people move towards 65, that magic Medicare age, their mailboxes get filled up with all kinds of come-ons for Advantage, Medicare Advantage policies or supplements. For our listeners, what's the difference?
Well, that's a great question. I really appreciate you asking that. A Medicare Advantage plan actually falls under what's known as Part C of the four parts of Medicare. Part A is hospitalization. Part B is your doctor visits and preventative services. Part C is Medicare Advantage, and then, of course, Part D that came about in 2006 and 2007 are your prescription drug plans. In Part C, a health insurance company contracts directly with Medicare, and for the time that you're enrolled into a Medicare Advantage plan, they literally take over the place of Medicare. Now, that's not permanently. It's just for the time that you're on the plan.
Mm-hmm.
And they essentially put you through an HMO or a PPO network environment, and they are reimbursed directly for Medicare on their cost of providing care for you. A Medicare supplement is secondary insurance. So you're still on the original parts of Medicare, Part A and Part B, and then you have your supplement, which is designed to cover all of the coinsurance and copays that you're responsible for just having Part A and Part B. Generally speaking, Medicare Advantage plans are much more affordable from a premium standpoint, but they're also much more restrictive from a network standpoint. Medicare supplements have a higher cost involved, but you also have much more freedom and flexibility in choosing your doctors and having control of your own healthcare outcomes.
That was author and fraud investigator Nick Sconce, who appeared this week on Prairie Public's Main Street. For more information, you can find him at nicksconceauthor.com.